Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from antiwar.com. This is anti-war news for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. All right, the first story at the top of antiwar.com today, Israel's buffer zone will take 16% of Gaza's land. So Israel's plan to create a buffer zone inside Gaza along its border with Israel will take 16% of the Strip's territory. And this was reported by the Wall Street Journal, and they cited an analysis of this operation being carried out by Israel. That was done by a Hebrew University geography professor. So Israel has begun the process of constructing this zone, which involves demolishing Palestinian homes and agricultural land that are in the way. And this buffer will be about 1 kilometer in width, which is about 0.6 miles. And when you're talking about an area like Gaza, a relatively small territory, that is a significant chunk of land that they're taking. So I was surprised to see that it's actually 16%. So Israeli media reported in January that Israel had destroyed 1,100 of the 2,800 buildings in these border areas that it intends to destroy. And if you remember, in that same month, back in January, 21 Israeli soldiers were killed while they were planting explosives in buildings along the border, and a Hamas rocket detonated those explosives and collapsed the buildings onto these Israeli soldiers. And, you know, that's what they were carrying out. And the Israeli military insists that they need to create this so-called buffer zone to prevent future October 7th style attacks. But of course, this also advances Israel's seizure of Gaza's territory. And we know that many ministers within the Israeli government, many members of the Israeli Knesset, openly want to conquer the Gaza Strip, reestablish Jewish settlements, and ultimately expel the Palestinians. That's the ultimate goal, it seems like. So this is all part of the plan, I believe. And on top of the buffer zone on the border, Israel is also constructing a road that will cut the Gaza Strip in two. And Israel claims that it does not seek to occupy Gaza, but wants to maintain open-ended security control of Gaza, which requires some form of military occupation, whether it actually involves troops inside the territory, or a blockade, or this, you know, creating these no man's lands inside Gaza that the Israeli military can, so they can come and go as they please. And the Biden administration claims that it is opposed to any Israeli plans that will shrink Gaza's territory, but the U.S. continues to support Israel's campaign in Gaza while it's enacting this plan that will steal 16% of Gaza's territory. So I just think this is getting overlooked. I mean, 16%, again, this is a significant amount of Gaza's territory, and Israel's just going right ahead with this. This isn't something that they're saying that they're going to do down the line. This is something that they're doing right now, and it just doesn't seem like it's getting much attention. All right, so the next one here, President Biden knew back in October that Israel was bombing civilian targets. So the Washington Post reported on Monday that Biden administration officials knew back in October that Israel was bombing buildings in Gaza without having solid intelligence that they were military targets, and the U.S. continued to provide all this support for the slaughter of Palestinians, regardless of already knowing this. And, you know, this is no surprise to us, of course. It's obvious to anyone who could see what's happening in Gaza that Israel was not just bombing military targets. But this, I thought this was notable. This Washington Post report, it said that there was a briefing that took place on October 27th at the White House, and top Biden officials said this. And if you remember, about a month later, 972 magazine, which is an Israeli publication, they published a report that revealed Israel was actually intentionally hitting civilian targets. Israeli intelligence sources said that Israel was hitting what it called power targets, which include civilian infrastructure such as high-rise apartment buildings, banks, universities, and other public buildings. The sources also said that the Israeli military would approve strikes on that would kill a large number of civilians to target one Hamas member. In one case, they signed off on a strike that killed hundreds of civilians to kill one Hamas commander. So again, we know that Israel is intentionally killing civilians. It's very clear. And then another thing that was acknowledged during this October 27th meeting, so this is 20 days after October 7th, and they acknowledged that, that Israel had no clear plan on how to defeat Hamas. A source familiar with the meeting told the Washington Post, quote, "We never had a clear sense that the Israelis had a definable and achievable military objective. From the very beginning, there's been a sense of us not knowing how the Israelis were going to do what they said they were going to do," end quote. So I just think it's really something here that they're saying, back in October when this thing first started, we knew Israel was killing civilians, you know, hitting civilian targets, and we knew that they didn't have a realistic goal. You know, Netanyahu saying he wants to eradicate Hamas is not a realistic goal, and that's something Israeli and U.S. intelligence has acknowledged, yet they went ahead and supported Israel as much as they possibly could with all these weapons shipments and everything and the political cover at the U.N. And this Washington Post report, it portrays that Biden is now stuck with this war that he didn't want. Well, if he didn't want it, then he wouldn't have supported it. I think it's as simple as that. This is kind of seemed to be a piece of propaganda from the Washington Post, again, portraying Biden as the reluctant partner in this genocidal war against the Palestinians. All right, so the next one here, officials and aid groups blast Israel for causing famine in Gaza. So this one is from Kyle Anzalone at the Libertarian Institute. It says officials and human rights organizations denounce the Israeli actions in Gaza as deliberately provoking a humanitarian crisis that is now on the brink of an outright famine. Israel has created widespread starvation and dehydration in Gaza by preventing aid from entering the besieged enclave. The International Watchdog for Food Insecurity Integrated Food Security Phase Classification. So this is, again, International Food Insecurity Watchdog. They released a new report on Monday saying that famine in Gaza will begin in the next 2 months. And for them to declare famine, at least 2 per 10,000 people are dying every day. So that would be a pretty massive number of people dying of starvation each day in Gaza. And there's also a report from Oxfam on the situation in Gaza that said Israel was, of course, preventing aid, including medical supplies, from reaching the Strip. Oxfam said, quote, "Israel's policies and practices continue to systematically and deliberately block and undermine any meaningful international humanitarian response in the Gaza Strip. Israel's control of Gaza continues to be characterized by deliberate, restrictive actions that have led to a severe and systemic dysfunctionality of the delivery of aid," end quote. And this is another thing that the U.S. cannot deny, considering that they're doing these airdrops of aid and enacting this plan to build a pier to get aid into Gaza. So just all sorts of crazy things going on here when the U.S. could just cut off Israel and make them allow more aid trucks in and get them to stop. All right, so the next one here, Israeli delegation will visit the U.S. to discuss the attack on Rafah. So Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will send a delegation of officials to the U.S. to discuss Israeli plans to attack Rafah, which is the southern Gaza city on the Egyptian border that is packed with 1.5 million Palestinians. So National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that Netanyahu agreed to send a senior interagency team composed of military, intelligence, and humanitarian officials during a phone call with President Biden on Monday. So Biden and Netanyahu had a talk on Monday, and the U.S. has warned against a full-scale assault on Rafah without taking into account the safety of the civilians who are there. Israeli officials have said that they will evacuate the civilians to what they call humanitarian islands, but it's not clear where these locations are. And of course, Israel has a history of attacking what they have previously called safe zones in Gaza. And Sullivan said that Israel has not presented the U.S. with any sort of plan of how they would safely move the civilians or feed and house them and ensure them access to basic things like sanitation. So the U.S. has still seen no plan on that. But Netanyahu continues to vow that he's going to go ahead with his attack on Rafah. His office announced this past Friday that he approved the military's plan to attack Rafah. No sense of a timeline, so it's not clear when it's going to happen. And then I mention again that, you know, you have these media reports that say Biden's considering conditioning military aid to Israel if it attacks Rafah without protecting civilians. But U.S. officials told ABC News that they're actually thinking about increasing military support for Israel to incentivize less civilian casualties, even though U.S. aid and political cover is what has emboldened Israel to do what they've been doing. The idea that more aid is going to give them incentive to scale things down, I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. So the next story here, Israeli forces launch another raid on the Al-Shifa hospital in northern Gaza. So this article is from Middle East Eye. So Israeli forces launched a new raid on Gaza City's Al-Shifa hospital on Monday, just as Palestinians were preparing to have their pre-fast Ramadan meal before dawn. The attack started shortly after 2 a.m. local time, with tanks advancing toward the medical complex under the cover of heavy aerial bombardment. Tanks surrounding the hospital before shelling some of its buildings, including the surgery department, according to Palestine's health ministry. Initial reports say several people were killed and wounded, but medical teams have not been able to reach them due to heavy Israeli fire in the hospital's courtyards. I know Israel is claiming that they killed 20 people, said that they were battles with fighters at the hospital. And I know at least 30,000 people were inside the hospital at the time of the attack. Many people have been sheltering there. So it's just a complete disaster. I know I saw some videos of one was of a father and a daughter who were killed by Israel, you know, a very young girl in this attack on the Al-Shifa hospital. And this was the hospital that Israel claimed there was a big Hamas command center underneath it. And that was completely a false claim. Israel never showed any evidence to show that. And it was even the Washington Post had this whole report about how there was no evidence to back up that Israeli claim. So it's under attack again. And this has been a war on hospitals. I mean, they've laid siege to, I think, almost every hospital in the Gaza Strip at one point or another. Just really goes to show how no place is safe for the Palestinians. All right, so the next one here, getting into some Ukraine stuff. Macron, the French president, is at it again. He says that ground operations in Ukraine might be necessary. So French President Emmanuel Macron shows no sign of backing down on his bellicose rhetoric related to the war in Ukraine. As he said in an interview published over the weekend, that at some point, Western ground operations in Ukraine may be necessary. Macron said, quote, maybe at some point, I don't want it. I won't take the initiative. We will have to have operations on the ground, whatever they may be, to counter the Russian forces. France's strength is that we can do it, end quote. So really just insane, these things that he has been saying since last month when he sparked this huge controversy by saying that NATO should not rule out sending troops to Ukraine, and that's a position he has now reaffirmed multiple times. His comments brought attention to the fact that there are a small number of NATO troops inside Ukraine already, but he's talking about, especially with these latest comments, saying that ground operations might be necessary to counter the Russian forces. I mean, it sounds like he's talking about a major deployment for combat against Russia, which is should be completely out of the question, because of course that would quickly turn into a nuclear war. And what's really strange about Macron is that in the early days of the war, he was one of the few NATO leaders who kept in touch with Putin. And he said that diplomacy, at one point, he said that they're going to have to take into account Russia's security concerns for a peace deal, saying that that would be necessary to end the conflict. But now that's all out the window, and he has adopted the maximalist demands of the Zelensky government in Ukraine. In an interview with French TV last week, he claimed that there could be no peace without Ukraine taking Crimea and kicking Russia out of all the territory that it's captured, which are just completely unrealistic goals. So these comments from Macron come as Ukraine is losing significant territory on the battlefield and is stepping up all these attacks in Crimea and the Russian mainland. And of course, this all risks huge escalations, as I covered yesterday, with these Ukrainian drone attacks all over Russia. Because from Moscow's point of view, this wouldn't be happening without support from the West. And that's not an unfounded view. We know that Ukrainian drone attacks use intelligence provided by the Western backers. You know, of course, the CIA support for the Ukrainian intel agencies that have conducted sabotage and assassinations inside Russia. Just all sorts of craziness going on here. It just seems like things are just getting crazier when it comes to NATO involvement in Ukraine. All right, so the next one here. Senator Lindsey Graham demands that Ukrainians keep fighting. So speaking of insane, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, visited Ukraine on Monday, and he demanded that Ukrainians keep fighting against Russia despite the bleak situation on the battlefield, and urged Kiev to pass a new mobilization bill. So Graham sharply criticized Ukraine's current draft laws, which exempt men under the age of 27 from being mobilized for combat, although under martial law, men aged 18 to 60 cannot leave the country. So Ukraine's parliament passed a bill last year to lower the mobilization age to 25, but it was not signed by Zelensky. I should say they can't be forcibly mobilized for combat. They can volunteer for it. And if they have previous military experience service, I believe they could be conscripted for it. But under the current laws, if you're under 27, no military experience, how I understand it, you can't be sent to the front lines against your will. And I know a lot of young Ukrainians volunteered in the early days of the war, but now nobody wants to volunteer. So the Ukraine's parliament did pass a bill to lower that age to 25 last year. Zelensky did not sign it into law. And Ukrainian lawmakers are now debating doing that, passing that bill again. They want to mobilize 500,000 new troops. And I don't know if they have that many people they can conscript. That are able-bodied, that would be able to go fight. And this idea is also very unpopular within Ukraine as war fatigue has been setting in. But it doesn't matter to Lindsey Graham. He says, fight, 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 go fight and die is essentially what he's saying here. He made these comments while visiting Ukraine. He said, quote, I would hope that those eligible to serve in the Ukrainian military would join. I can't believe it's at 27. You're in a fight for your life, so you should be serving, not at 25 or 27. We need more people in the line, end quote. Graham said that Ukrainians should continue to fight regardless of how much support they're receiving from the West. He said, quote, no matter what we do, you should be fighting. No matter what we do, you're fighting for you, end quote. So in the early days of the war, there's a quote from Lindsey Graham that always goes around that he said Ukraine should fight to the last Ukrainian. He said this back in 2022. The exact quote that he said is, quote, I like the structural path we're on here. As long as we help Ukraine with the weapons they need and the economic support, they will fight to the last person, end quote. So seems to be part of that line of thinking is, yeah, of course, draft as many people as you can, send them to the front. You know, we want to keep this thing going no matter what. And During his visit to Kiev on Monday, Graham also said that he expected the House to ultimately pass the $95 billion foreign military aid bill that includes the $60 billion for Ukraine. He also said that he favored the idea of loaning money to Ukraine, which is something that was recently floated by President Trump. So it's not good to see Trump and Lindsey Graham agreeing on things, because Graham has kept on Trump's good side. And, you know, if he's going to have influence on Trump again when he comes back into office, that's bad news. So Graham said, quote, "I was very direct with President Zelensky. You can expect me to always be in your corner, but it's not unfair for me to ask you and other allies, pay us back down the road if you can. I think the loan idea is getting pretty popular," end quote. All right, so the next one here, a covert CIA campaign to smear China started in 2019. So Reuters reported last week that under the direction of then President Donald Trump, the CIA launched a covert campaign in 2019 on social media to turn public opinion in China against the government. Former U.S. officials said that Trump's authorization allowed the CIA to take action in China and in countries where Washington and Beijing are vying for influence. Operations to denigrate China on social media were carried out in Southeast Asia, Africa, and the South Pacific. The CIA also leaked disparaging intelligence to international news outlets to paint China in a bad light. So to me, that's a big part of this, saying that the CIA was leaking things to the media. If you look at 2019, 2020, there's so much negative media coverage of China. And I mean, like, even before COVID, 2019, this is when the narrative about the Uyghurs really started to kick off. And you had Mike Pompeo declare it was a genocide, even though there's no evidence of that. And, you know, this definitely makes me suspicious of those types of narratives that were pushed. There's also this big organ harvesting accusation. So the former U.S. officials speaking to Reuters, they did not offer much detail about the social media campaign, but said that CIA operatives using false identities were spreading narratives about corruption in China and about Beijing's Belt and Road Initiative. The officials claimed that the actions were a response to China using covert means to spread its global influence. Reuters said that it was unable to determine if President Biden has continued this campaign. I would guess there's a very strong chance that he did, because he's taken a very hard line against China and all this military expansion in Asia, increased support for Taiwan, and all that. And Biden's CIA also opened a new spy center dedicated exclusively to China. And William Burns has been very outspoken about the CIA's work against China. He's actually just said publicly that they're rebuilding their spy networks inside China, which is something you would think he would want to keep, the CIA would want to keep quiet, but, you know, he's been talking about this stuff openly. So in response to this report, the Chinese Foreign Ministry said that the CIA operations show that the U.S. uses, quote, public opinion space and media platforms as weapons to spread false information and manipulate international public opinion, end quote. All right, so the next one here, China increases patrols near Taiwan's controlled Kinmen Islands. So China has maintained its increase in patrols near Kinmen, which are those Taiwanese-controlled islands just a few miles off the coast of the mainland of mainland China, where U.S. Army Special Forces are now stationed. The Chinese Coast Guard stepped up its presence near Kinmen, known as Quemoy, in China, after two Chinese fishermen died last month when their boat capsized while being chased by Taiwan's Coast Guard. So according to the South China Morning Post, eight Chinese Coast Guard vessels patrolled waters near Kinmen on Friday and Saturday. China's Taiwan Affairs Office described the patrols as a normal act because, quote, Taiwan is part of China and regular law enforcement in waters near Quemoy is the duty of the mainland Coast Guard, end quote. So Taiwanese authorities said that they warned off the Chinese vessels and they condemned the patrols, of course. The U.S. also got involved. I mean, you know, you talk about meddling in other people's affairs. So the U.S. condemned the Chinese patrols. And again, these are islands that are at certain points only 2.5 miles away from China. And you have the U.S. making statements about it. A U.S. State Department official said that China's continued provocations in waters close to Kinmen revealed its intention to unilaterally change the status quo. And this latest incident comes after Taiwan confirmed that there are American Green Berets permanently stationed on Kinmen to help train. We don't know exactly how many. It's probably a small amount, maybe a few dozen. But still, it's, you know, you put the shoe on the other foot here. And I know, so China has kind of a reason to increase these patrols separately of U.S. troops being there, the two Chinese fishermen who died. And it was reported that U.S. troops were in Kinmen before that happened. So China had, again, had a reason, but maybe there's a chance that they are doing this also to kind of send a message to the U.S. like, hey, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing here? So it's just an area to keep an eye on, you know, and I have this map in this story. It's like a zoomed out map if you're listening, and it just really puts it in perspective where Kinmen is, right on the coast of mainland China. All right, so the next one here, Idaho House Committee votes down the Defend the Guard Act. So this is bad news. This was on Monday, a committee in the Idaho House of Representatives voted down the Defend the Guard Act, which is the legislation that would prohibit the state's National Guard from being deployed to a combat zone without a declaration of war from Congress. And I know people were hopeful about this. They thought that if they got through this committee, it would pass a full House vote and then go to the governor's desk to become law because it already passed Idaho's state Senate. And it passed the Senate pretty overwhelmingly, but it didn't do good in this House committee. Only four lawmakers voted in favor of it, while 12 voted against it. A lot of generals showed up. What they do is threaten that this is going to lose, they're going to lose funding. Their National Guard's going to lose funding. That's basically the threat, even though that would be something that would have to go through Congress. And, you know, it's not something the executive branch could just do. But that's their threat. They basically come and they make that threat. And they also convince, I think, the state legislatures that, you know, politically it's better for you to be against this. That's why what Bring Our Troops Home does, the organization behind Defend the Guard, they really whip up the grassroots support for this. So people, that's why you should volunteer for their phone banking. And what they do is pester the state representatives and state senators to support this stuff. So Bring Our Troops Home, you know, this is a setback, but they're working on this in over 30 states in the U.S. And this is a relatively young project, only a few years old. So the fact that they're passing through state legislatures is a big deal. And they put out a statement saying that they're going to keep fighting in Idaho and elsewhere in the country. So I always put the link for the phone bank if you want to volunteer and make a big difference. That's something you could do. Go to defendtheguard.us and you can see all the different states where it's been introduced and all that. And again, this would prevent the federal government from being able to deploy a state's National Guard to a combat zone where Congress hasn't declared war. And Congress hasn't declared war since World War II. So it would really impact the federal government's ability to wage war if states started passing this. And I think it's going to be one of those things that once one state makes it law, then it might have a domino effect. And so, but they're going to keep fighting, the guys that Bring Our Troops Home, and we should too, and get involved. And I'll try to keep, you know, a lot of attention on this legislation and this activism. All right, so the last story here is one from Kyle. No evidence of brain injuries in Havana syndrome. So two studies conducted by the National Institute of Health on scores of people claiming to have Havana syndrome did not find any evidence of brain damage. Purported victims of Havana syndrome claim that they were targeted by a foreign power with a mysterious weapon that called that caused neurological issues. So Havana syndrome was first reported among American diplomats in Cuba in 2016, who claimed to be exposed to a sonic weapon that caused headaches. There's investigations from a group of scientists who advised the U.S. government, who concluded that crickets native to Cuba were actually making the noise, causing neurological symptoms. So it was crickets initially, but then you started to see diplomats reporting similar symptoms in Vietnam, Russia, China. And this advanced, could benefit them in two ways. It advances this narrative that there's some scary, you know, microwave type weapon that is being used, directed energy weapon that's being used against these American diplomats. And also, the ones who reported symptoms are getting compensation for that. You know, they're getting I remember I covered this a while ago, that the government, the State Department, was saying that they're going to compensate anyone who's had the Havana syndrome, even though there's no proof that it's a real thing. So I think that could be a big motive for some of these diplomats reporting it. And then you also had CIA guys saying it happened to them. And I think that's more part of the kind of PSYOP angle of it. But just more evidence that it's not, that this isn't a real thing. That's it for the news for today. That was a lot of stuff all over the place too. So please go check out our viewpoints. One from David Knox: U.S. media fails to note Israel's refutation of the beheaded babies claim. One from Ted Snyder: has Macron become unmoored? I would say he has. One from Matt Taibbi at his Substack on the absurd New York Times hit piece. One from James Carden: Biden and company take aim at Central Europe. And one from Jack Merkinson: tragic absurdity of Biden's Gaza policies. So please go check all that out. Again, just a lot of stuff today. My throat is still kind of messed up. Hopefully it doesn't get worse. But anyway, you could always support us by sharing this show. Tell your friends about antiwar.com. You could always support us financially if you go to antiwar.com/donate. Commenting, sharing, all that stuff really helps out. Leave reviews in if you listen to the podcast. I really appreciate that and all of the engagement and interaction. I'll be back tomorrow with some more news. Thanks for listening.